Chapter 24. I walked the shadowy streets, thinking, or at least trying to think. When I'd been alive, walking was something I did when I needed to chew something over. Engage the body in effort and activity, and the purely physical manifestations of a mental problem stopped being distractions. I didn't have a body anymore, but I didn't know how else to cope with so many overwhelming troubles. So I walked, silent and invisible, my head down, and I thought furiously as I went. A single fact glared out at me, blazing in front of my mind's eye in stark reality, illuminated by all the lives that were on fire around me. In the end, when it had mattered most, I'd blown it. I grew up an orphan, with nothing but a few vague memories of my father before he died. My childhood hadn't been the kind of thing I'd wish on anyone. I had run into some bad people. Justin was the worst, a true monster. When I was 16 or 17, still agonized by his betrayal and certain that I would never know anything like a home, friends, or family, I made myself a promise. I would never allow a child of mine to grow up as I had, driven from home to home, an easy victim with no protector, never stable, never certain. Never. When Susan had asked me to help her recover Maggie, I went all in without a second thought. The child was my daughter. It didn't matter that I hadn't known about her, or that I had never seen her with my own eyes. There was a child of my blood who needed my help and protection. I was her father. I would die to protect her if need be. End of story. I may have had good reasons. I may have had the best of intentions. But intentions aren't enough, no matter how good they are. Intentions can lead you to a place where you are able to make a choice. It's the choice that counts. To get my daughter back, I'd crossed a line. Not just crossed it, I'd sprinted at it, and taking a flying freaking leap over it. I'd made a pact with the Queen of Air and Darkness, giving away my free will, my very self, to Mab, in exchange for power enough to challenge the Red King and his monstrous court. That was stupid. I'd had excuses at the time. My back had been against the wall. Actually, it had been broken and against a wall. All the help I'd been able to call upon, all the allies and tricks and techniques in my arsenal, had not been enough. My home had been destroyed, so had my car. I couldn't even get up and walk, much less fight. And the forces arrayed against me had been great, so great that even the White Council of Wizards was terrified of confronting them. In that bleak hour, I had chosen to sell my soul. And after that, I had led my closest friends and allies out on what I knew was practically a suicide mission. I'd known that such a battle would put a savage strain on Molly's psychic senses, and that even if she did manage to survive, she might never be the same. I'd risked the two irreplaceable swords of the cross in my keeping, sending them into the battle, even though I knew that if we fell, some of the world's mightiest weapons for good would be captured and lost. And when I saw that the sacrificial blood rite the Red King had intended to destroy me could be turned back on the Red Court, I had used it without hesitation. I murdered Susan Rodriguez on a stone altar in Chichen Itza and wiped out the Red Court. I saved my little girl. I created a perfect situation for chaos to engulf the supernatural world. The sudden absence of the Red Court might have removed thousands of monsters from the world, but it meant only that tens of thousands of other monsters were suddenly free to rise, to expand into the vacuum I'd created. I shuddered as I wondered how many other men's little girls had been hurt and killed as a result. And, God help me, I would do it again. It wasn't right, it wasn't noble, it wasn't good. I'd spent less than 3 hours in the company of my daughter, and so help me, if it meant keeping her safe, I would do it again. Maybe the White Council needed an eighth law of magic, the law of unintended consequences. How do you measure one life against another? Can thousands of deaths be balanced by a single life? Even if Mab had not had time to fully take possession of me, how could I be sure that the very act of choosing to cross that line had not changed me into something monstrous? I found myself stopped, standing on the Michigan Avenue bridge over the Chicago River. The mounded snow filled the night with light. Only the waters below me were dark, a black and whispering shadow, the Lethe and the Styx in one. I looked up at the towers nearby, NBC, Trump's Place, the Sheraton. They stood tall and straight and clean in the night. Lights winked golden in windows. I turned and stared south of me at the Loop, at the skyline I knew so well. There was a rare moment of stillness down Michigan Avenue. Streetlights, traffic lights, a scattering of fresh snowflakes, enough to keep everything pretty and white instead of slushy and brown. God, my town is beautiful. Chicago. It's insane and violent and corrupt and vital and artistic and noble and cruel and wonderful. It's full of greed and hope and hate and desire and excitement and pain and happiness. The air sings with screams and laughter, with sirens, with angry shouts, with gunshots, with music. It's an impossible city, at war with itself, every horrible and wonderful thing blending together to create something terrifying and lovely and utterly unique. I had spent my adult life here, fighting, bleeding, to protect its people from threats they thought were purely imaginary. And because of what I'd done, the lines I'd crossed, the city had gone mad. Fomor in their turtlenecks, freakish ghost riots, huddled groups of terrified folks of the supernatural community. I hadn't meant for that to happen, but that didn't matter. I was the guy who made the choice. This was all on me. I stared down at the quiet blackness of the river. I could go down there, I realized. Running water would disrupt supernatural energy, disperse it, destroy the pattern in which it flowed. And I was made out of energy now. The black, whispering river could make everything go away. Styx, Lethe, oblivion. My apprentice was bitter, damaged. My friends were fighting a war, and it was tearing at their souls. The one guy who I was sure could help me out had been snatched, and there wasn't a whole lot I could do about it. Hell's bells. I was doing well just to find someone who could hear me talk. What could I do? What do you do to make up for failing everyone in your life? How do you make it right? How do you apologize for hideous things you never intended to happen? I don't remember when I fell to my knees. Memories, stirred by my rumination, flooded over me, almost as sharp and real as life. Those memories stirred others and brought them along like pebbles triggering a landslide. My life in Chicago rolled over me, crushed me, all the black pain and bright joy doubling me over, ripping tears out of my eyes. Later it was quiet. It was difficult. A tremendous, slow inertia resisted my desire, but I pushed myself to my feet again. I turned away from the river. This city was more than concrete and steel. It was more than hotels and businesses and bars. It was more than pubs and libraries and concerts. It was more than a car and a basement apartment. It was home. My home. Sweet home, Chicago. The people here were my family. They were in danger, and I was part of the reason why. That made things pretty clear. It didn't matter that I was dead. It didn't matter that I was literally a shadow of my former self. It didn't matter that my murderer was still running around somewhere out there, vague prophecies of Captain Murphy notwithstanding. My job hadn't changed. When demons and horrors and creatures of the night prey on this city, I'm the guy who does something about it. Time to start doing, I whispered. I closed my hands into fists, straightened my back, and vanished.